mess with us if we think we need a war. We need a war.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. There we go. Just getting all set up and comfy here. Do I look comfortable, Mario?
You always look awkward and uncomfortable.
Okay. This is the Inkstud's radio show where we talk about comics. So to CITR, it's a lovely Thursday. Mm-mm. Jeez, what is wrong with me today? Thursday,
Have your show every Thursday. How do you mess that up?
I don't know. There is seriously something wrong with me. These headphones are really sucking. Yeah, Thursday, CITR, 2 o'clock. Campus is busy. School's back in session. My guest today is Trevor Alexopoulos. Did I get your name pronounced properly, Trevor?
Yes, almost exactly right.
Almost exactly right. Excellent. I usually get everything wrong.
They're in the 95th percentile as far as pronouncing that name.
Nice. Well, that makes me feel special.
Yeah.
So, Trevor's books, plural, Mine Tonight, and most recently debuted, I guess, at Stumptown a couple months ago. Hot Breath of War, yes. Fantastic books, very imaginative. I'm trying to think of like an apt description to come up with, but I guess just imaginative look at how war has affected you?
Yeah, I guess so. I think it's a, you know, it's very eclectic book because it's, you know, I'm sort of looking at different aspects of, there's a lot of different styles of cartooning in it, and I'm sort of looking at different aspects of the way that war and sort of our, you know, current events percolate into people's like more private lives. And so there's some parts that are pretty cartoony and like Elsie Sager looking, and then some parts that are more realistic. It's hard to wrap it all up into one one like kind of overarching theme, because it's not a straightforward, you know, Buying Tonight was a more of like a movie where you just, you know, it had a plot and it was like a political thriller, whereas this is more of like a art piece, I guess.
Yeah. They're definitely completely different books.
Mm-hmm.
They have a similar flavor, but they come from different restaurants.
Yeah.
That's my So how did you get so in kind of affected by outside events, and how has that affected your own work?
Well, I think that it's kind of interesting because I've been into comics for a really long time. Like, I started reading comics when I was a little kid, and I was kind of a fairly typical comics nerd. Like maybe a little well rounded, because I read a lot of different. I read, like, I was into Tintin and as well as superhero comics and a lot of stuff. And then as I got older and later in my teens, I think that I sort of I definitely got into indie comics and art comics, but I think I'm probably a lot less interested in comics than I was interested in reading comics than I was when I was a kid or as a teenager. And so I read a lot of stuff that's like not most of the time when I'm reading comics, it's more for like inspirational or aspirational purposes. Like, it's either to sort of get myself psyched, where I'm really excited about somebody, and it's going to make me excited to do comics myself, or it's more like a competitive thing where I mm-hmm. look at somebody and like, I can see what they're trying to do, and I bet I could do it better, or you know, or in the same kind of vein. But a lot of the reading that I do is not really comics. So it's more like I read a lot of nonfiction and things like that, and things that are very, you know, and very, you know, not sort of, I don't know, like, I read a lot of news, and I guess I'm kind of like affected by the outside world a lot. I want to, you know, I like to draw comics. I want to try to channel the you know, reactions that I get to the world that I'm in, into something that's like artistically rewarding. I part of why I don't really read comics is I'm sort of underwhelmed by a lot of comics, and I wanted to try to do comics that I guess are, you know, more sort of looking out to the broader world and kind of reacting to them. Even if it's like I'm not really into doing like comics that are straight like
narratives.
Political propaganda or straight nonfiction. Like, it's funny because the stuff I read is very different from the stuff that I draw. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's definitely influenced by all those things.
Who are some of the writers that you really enjoy?
When I first started, you know, sort of reading that kind of stuff, I was really into George Orwell and his like Politics and the English Language and things like that. And it's generally kind of just like a mix. I work in a library, so I pick up whatever's like kind of new, and then we have on the new bookshelves, which frequently tends to be nonfiction. I've read a lot of journalistic exposés of the Iraq War, like No End in Sight and things like that. Actually, that was the movie. I forgot what the book. I saw the movie, but there's a couple other books, like Inside the Green Zone and things like that, which are just sort of like interesting from like a human folly perspective. I think what I try to do with The Hot Breath of War is not make it really about, explicitly about like the, you know, whatever particular misadventure that we're in at the moment, but more sort of broad and more about like the impulses that lead people to do those kind of stupid things.
Well, I think I should clarify, because I make it sound like you're doing a war comic
mm-hmm.
by the descriptions, and it's not a war comic.
Yeah.
In fact, it's more the, I guess, the war aspect's pretty minimal.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's a response comment of human condition.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going way out of left field there?
Yeah, I think that there's a little bit of a very small amount of kind of war, like explicitly war related things. It's more sort of about like, it's a, you know, about sex and war. It's sort of about how the human capacity for passion and how one kind of feeds into the other. There's parts where you know there's actually like soldiers running around and stuff blowing up, but then there's other things that are
very removed
from it, and you have to sort of make a mental leap to see the connections. But there was one thing that I sort of wanted to sort of explore with it was how like have you heard of Andrew Paglen, who did a book just recently called I forget what it's called. I could tell you, but then you would have to be destroyed by me.
The name's mildly familiar.
It was this book of like he did all these studies of like kind of military patches, they're for deeply confidential programs and things like that. Like, and so there are all these really surreal, you know, there'll be an alien holding clutching in his hand like three bolts of lightning, and it's all like symbolism, and they're supposed to, you know, it's for like, they'll be for like confidential spy satellite things, and like that's kind of in terms of like the way that people look at war, that's like it's rife with symbolism and heraldry and non-rational things, weird non-rational images and things like that. And that's kind of how like people prepare themselves to go to war, is by putting themselves in that kind of place where you make these irrational leaps. And I thought like comics would be sort of well suited for that, because you make leaps all the time with comics, where you know, just between the panels you're making leaps, and you can sort of leave a lot up to the interpretation of the reader. So there's a lot of parts in the comic that are just, you know, there's like the story of just a couple of people going out, like, that going out to a bar, and there's more like, you know, it's sort of like everyday kind of things. And there's sort of a surreal story about a guy taking a girl out. And, I think that, like, you know, when you read them all in context, you sort of can get the you know, how they connect to each other. I was just sort of, I thought that would kind of work well to comic strengths, because we sort of use, for like violence, both sex and violence, we use the same kind of profanity. Mm-hmm. And we use, like, you know, to sort of make them palatable for ourselves, like, so I thought like comics would sort of work well for that, because they do sort of deal in symbols and as kind of abstractions.
One thing you do with this book is you really avoid maintaining a storytelling style.
Uh-huh.
I guess. And is that kind of an aspect, a purposeful to kind of interject different ways of interpreting the story? Because, I mean, just one simple thing is paneling. You really only do that in one short story.
Yeah. The one where I use real paneling is a very straightforward, it's a four page comic that's like a very straightforward little vignette from a war. Since like that kind of style is for the panels and with the semi-realistic figure drawing and everything is what something that like comics readers are going to be familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would make sense to, since that part is essentially kind of just a straight nonfiction vignette, I thought it would be suited towards a straightforward war comics drawing style. But then there's other ones that are more surreal, and there's like, you know, so I think I definitely tailored it to individual, in the individual strips. Like the very first strip in the book is very slapsticky, satire and that's drawn in this I would say it's like a Popeye kind of style. Mm-hmm. I guess
it's kind of like a Popeye meets Ron Ricci.
Yeah Popeye, yeah, sort of Popeye, but by way of, you know, the indie comics aesthetic of the past 10 years. There's other ones that I sort of eschew panels in most of the book, and I thought it creates this kind of dreamlike feel, like a sort of dreamy, nonlinear feel. And you know, it's definitely kind of tailored to the individual strips, because I thought that would, since it's a book made up of a bunch of individual strips that are sort of going to thematically relate to each other. You know, I thought they each had to like sort of stand on their own and sort of create their own mood, and then hopefully all together they would form, you know, you would get one kind of mood from it, like a, you know, in aggregate.
Do you see yourself in the book?
I guess there's in some ways like the, like, you know, in when you're doing like a fiction story, like the characters, you take little aspects of yourself and then kind of run wild with them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess like I can see that I've took sort of parts of myself, like, or things that I've thought. It's pretty fragmented. There's nothing in the book that's like really explicitly autobiographical. You know, and that's even more sort of pronounced, I think, in Mind Tonight, because that has like, you know, the characters are prevalent through the whole book. So there's definitely that, and there's actual kind of autobiographical stuff sprinkled within Mind Tonight, where like there's, you know, it goes from being a fiction story to, you know, there's a fictional character reading a comic that's a comic that I drew that's supposed to be autobiographical.
And that's why I wondered, because you made yourself so, you know, a very pronounced character in Mind
Tonight.
Yeah,
yeah. I show up as a character in the book, which makes it even more kind of confusing.
It's a little Philip K. Dickey, we can say.
Yeah, yeah. It gets kind of metaphysical, I guess.
I'm going to play a quick song break.
Okay.
What would you like to hear?
See. Well, since it's so hot right now where I am, why don't you play the Summertime?
Summertime? Sounds good. We'll be right back. Ink Studs with Trevor Alexopoulos.
Summertime, and the living is easy. Fish are jumping, and cotton is high. Your dad is rich, and your ma is good looking. So hush, little baby, don't you cry. Sky, but until that morning, there is nothing can harm you. No, 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 no. With daddy and mommy standing
by CITR 101.9 FM. That was Summertime by Sam Cooke. It's a very gentle song.
Gentle, but it's very, very moody, too. So it's moody and the sort of sultry song.
It's a sad summertime.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I was actually, while I was listening, I was kind of thinking to your question about if I saw myself in the Hot Breath of War. And one aspect of it, I think, that probably comes out from me a lot is that I did this book, you know, I've been working on it for the past, like, so year and a half, and I as I was finishing, I just turned 30, and there's definitely a lot in it that's, like, I think, you know, that's sort of a young, like, you know, person in their 20s, but, like, looking back, sort of based. I've sort of reminded about how, like, the Peter Bagg started doing all his Buddy Bradley stories when he was at the end of his 20s, and mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of the comic that's just about, like, you know, even though there's these sort of, like, weighty historical socio concerns, there's a lot of the mood of the comic is just like, you know, the people in their 20s, like, going out and, like, sort of you know, trying to make desperate connections with people, and then having against this backdrop, I think it's very much like sort of has a feeling of being, you know, being that age, you know, in the Bush era, like, but nothing really explicitly so.
And just so people know, the book is The Hot Breath of War from Sparkplug, who one of my favorite little publishers right now. Be sure to check out sparkplugcomics.com.
I think that's right. Yeah.
If it's not right, I'll get hate.
I think it's Sparkplug Comic Books.
Comic Books. There we go.
So if you go to Sparkplug Comics, it'll probably just lead you to some, like, porno gambling site.
Yeah, I'm happy Inkstuds was available.
Yeah. You could make a mint selling that off, though, to somebody, probably.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Or maybe no one would be interested.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Mine Tonight. Now, is that your first big comic work?
Yeah, it's definitely, like, the longest thing I had done up to that point. And it's, like, definitely the sort of biggest, densest book that I've ever done. Because I'd mostly done mini comics. I mean, I did a couple pretty long mini comics, but nothing as long as Mine Tonight. And when I did not have, like, an idea to do a graphic novel originally. I don't know if maybe that shows up in the book or not, but when I basically had been doing mini comics, probably started when I was started doing mini comics when I was, like, 18, and I've been doing mini comics you know, until I think from, like, 1998 or something to, like, 2004. And then Dylan Williams, the publisher of Sparkplug Comic Books, asked me if I wanted to do a graphic novel. And I had a lot of, like, little ideas rattling around, and I definitely had the sort of feeling that I was, like, bumping up against the like, you know, the scale of mini comics. There was ideas that I wanted to do that didn't fit into mini comics, but nothing, like, really, nothing explicit. I didn't have a graphic novel sketched out when he approached me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had kind of this, you know, I was sort of at this moment where when he asked me, I was like, great, I want to do that. And then I was like, well, what do I actually want to do? And so it was a matter of kind of distilling all these different ideas that I had into one book.
Thus, Mine Tonight.
Yeah. Like, I think that was a good spot when he asked me, because I had just done a mini comic that was sort of very much in the vein of a lot of mini comics I'd done before that. I think I'd done a lot of kind of, I guess, like, sort of smart-ass satire, underground-y kind of mini comics. And I'd just done one called Hut Jacked that was probably, like, the best of that lot. But I was definitely kind of wanting to do something besides that, you know, something that wasn't, purely like a comic book, like underground comic Mad Magazine sort of style, though I definitely do like that kind of stuff. But I had ideas to do things other than that, so I was like, this is a good kind of stopping point for this kind of style to try something else.
So this is definitely a completely different book for you. Together.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever. Mine Tonight is you know, to somebody who hasn't read it, is a like a political. It's a, you know, fiction, and it's a political thriller that takes place during the 2004 American presidential elections. I had mostly just done sort of things that were like satire sort of comics or you know, small sort of abstract mini comics. So this is an attempt to do like a real kind of fiction novel.
Was there something in you that wanted to change what you were doing? That like profound moment that wanted to stop doing satire, because Hot Breath of War isn't satire.
Mm-hmm.
Mine Tonight, obviously, you know, it's not satire. We're just talking about that.
I think so. I think, I can't point to anything specific, but I think that I was sort of grown tired with the sort of mood that I was feeling with the state of the country is that I felt like satire was, but like I was getting sort of sick of the smallness of it. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like there was a lot of, for lack of a better word, past like 8 years have been sort of cinematic, I felt like the sort of emotions and reactions I was having to the sort of world around me, the way that the world has been running, was like I couldn't really justify like just having like a larf over it. Even though I do like satire and I like, you know, vicious political satire, I almost felt like that was kind of reductive. Like it was like that there has been such a kind of crazy amount of calamities that have happened, in the past half decade or so, that I wanted to try things that would sort of match that kind of scale.
How did Seattle change you? Or how was Seattle?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I guess
because I knew some people that went down for that from Vancouver.
Honestly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was definitely like a formative experience, but it's like one of those things where it's hard to know exactly how, you know, it's like it's a big enough experience that you can't really put your finger on everything about it. I think that
and just so people know what we're talking about, this is the WTO protests.
Yeah. There's a part in Mind Tonight where that takes place during the WT protest, I think that when it happened to me, I must have been like 20 or 21, I've always been sort of into like journalistic kind of comics and comics that, you know, the sort of nonfiction comics, after I came back, I wanted to do a comic about it, and I just felt like there wasn't, I wasn't really mature enough to do something based on the experience that I had, it was kind of weird because I feel like it was the first case where I was sort of realized how different, like how communication changes mm-hmm. things, like from what people see on the news is so different, and has to be so different from what is actually on the ground. So when I came back from the WTO protest, it was sort of shocking to see like how these narratives that sprout up, like that are so different from your own experience, and so that was kind of like a good lesson, I guess. And it was sort of a prelude to seeing how like facts get twisted around in the news, like, you know, years later in the run up to the Iraq War,
continuing.
I think that like it was sort of it was sobering in a way. I think that even though like when I went to Seattle, I was like your sort of typical idealistic like person in their early 20s, and I think I'm still pretty idealistic person. But I think that even though it was kind of like getting everything you wanted as like somebody who was politically minded in the late 90s, because it was like forcing a conversation and a confrontation about all these issues that people were concerned about, like globalization, and it was fairly successful as far as protests go. Like they wanted to shut down the WTO, and they did shut it down for a couple days, and they drew a lot of attention to it. I think that like in the long run, you know, looking back on it just from immediately like post like 9/11 and like the Bush era, it seems like such another time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that like, you know, having it was kind of like, you know, getting, you know, like your dad forcing you to smoke a bunch of cigarettes when you tried to smoke a cigarette or something. You know, it's like it was exciting at the time, but it also kind of like, I feel like it kind of like removed a lot of like illusions that I would have and sort of fantasies about like the glory of conflict and I was like as a young guy like
protesting,
you know, sort of wanting
utopianism
to like fight it out in the streets over those kind of things. So I think it took a little bit of the naivete off of me. And then I think, you know, that's continued in the past like 5 or 6 years after that, and it's just seeing the sort of like I remember noticing after 9/11 that so many people that were swept up in this idealistic wave and were so confident that what they were seeing on the news was real and what they were being told was real and so people like signed up for the army and jumped into these half-assed, poorly planned expeditions. I think definitely the WTO experience made me kind of skeptical about that because being manipulated into violent situations.
I just couldn't imagine living in the States, just the whole political conditioning that's been developed, and it seems like it's just going to get worse. Like, you know, you thought Bush and Cheney were bad, but Palin just seems this is a...
Yeah, she's pretty extreme herself. I think that, like, that's, you know, the things change so dramatically with Bush and Cheney, and they're not, nobody that replaces them that's from their side it's changed so much that it's only going to change slightly in degree. Like, you know, McCain isn't any better than Bush and might be worse, or, you know, might be slightly better. It's, you know, it could be, it's arguable, but it doesn't really matter because it's such a radical change, that the only, you know, the only way out is an equally dramatic lurch in the opposite direction, it seems like.
Do you think it's probable?
I'm hopeful. You know, I don't know. I'm not, you know, I'm not like totally
sold.
Like Pollyannish about like the other side being not being able to like shoot itself in the foot, but I think that like that there was like a small core of people who never went along with the sort of rush to war and with Bush, and as much as like they would like to write them out of the history and say like, well, we were all misled and confused, you know, it's like nobody's really fault, you know, it's kind of everybody's fault, nobody's fault. I think, you know, there were people that said it was a dumb idea and wrong at the time, And having one of those people like on the, you know, on the top of a national party's ticket is like a good reminder of that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, to me, like there was more, that's like almost like more important is that kind of this kind of historical narratives that that are set is like, you know, well, is this like colossal folly going to be swept under the rug, or is it going to be remembered as a folly and as a human tragedy?
And what kind of revisionism will we see develop?
Yeah, I mean, you see it because the same sort of patterns play out over and over again, and people tend to follow the same patterns. And you know, I was convinced that. That basically, you know, my sort of worst case scenario when the Iraq War started was that it was going to be a huge disaster, and then the very people who planned it would then blame everybody who was against it for mm-hmm. the fact for it being a disaster, you know, it's like the stab in the back. Myth where Germans in World War One blamed everybody, you know, the warmongers in Germany blamed everybody but themselves for losing the war when they were in fact like in ultimate control of it. And the same thing sort of pops up again. You see it popping up again in Vietnam where they're like, well, we could have won if we just stayed in there and finished the job. Like,
nah, they wouldn't have won.
Yeah, and so I kind of, you know, I thought that would happen, and you know, and I'm sort of, you know, mildly optimistic that hasn't happened, that people have basically, you know, allocated blame more or less where it belongs. But you know, I think that the other thing is that we've also like dug ourselves so deeply into a hole that it's hard to be, even the best case scenario is not all that optimistic.
No, and we'll actually talk a little more about that in a sec. I think I can do a quick music break.
Sure thing.
What would you like to hear? We got the Husker Du or the Cut Copy?
How about Cut Copy?
Okay, we'll be right back. This is Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM. That ended nice and noisy.
Yeah.
I like noise. CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inksuds radio show where we talk about comics. My guest today is Trevor Alexopoulos. Next week's guest will be Dash Shaw, where we'll be talking about his mammoth tome, The Bottomless Belly Button, a book so big you could kill a rat with it. The following week will be Ed Brisson. Will be talking about his new anthology, You Ain't No Dancer, Volume 3, and we'll actually probably have about three folks that are in the anthology on the show on the 25th. Pete Bagg will be joining us because he's going to be in Vancouver for Word on the Street at the end of the month at the Vancouver Library. And Eric Reynolds will be joining us for half that show with Pete Bagg, or Peter Bagg, I should say, to talk about the action suits. So that should be rocking and rolling. How you doing, Trevor?
Pretty good. That sounds like a pretty good lineup you got going there.
I think it's a good month. Oh, and I also will have some interviews just on the website only that won't be playing on air. One I'm doing later today with Victor Caro.
Ooh. My old friend Victor Caro.
And it should be interesting. I don't know what to expect. And as well as Timothy Hodler from Comics Mag. And Sean Ford, whose comic Only Skin is wonderful. And I picked it up at Stumptown. He's one of those comic school graduates from that place out east. The CCS?
In the White River Junction.
There we go. Yeah. White River Junction.
Yeah.
They got some good, talented folks coming out of there.
Yeah, they're pumping out some talented folks.
Too many comics out there to buy. And you should buy all of them, including today's guest Trevor Alexopoulos with Hot Breath of War, I should say, from Sparkplug Books. We were discussing politics. Does that make a good comic radio show?
Yeah, we sort of got into it, I guess.
That's okay. I'm a poli-sci student, so
we've got to, you know, keep things well-rounded.
Yeah, we can't talk about nibs all the time.
Yeah. Did you actually put the killing a rat with Dash's book into practice? Have you tried that? Does it work?
No, I only get mice in my house, and my cat gets them all. So
yeah.
But I have a feeling you could. It's a big book.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet, but it's like it looks weighty enough to do the job.
I was a little intimidated by it because of the sheer size of whether or not I would be lulled into a sleep from it, or if it was too much. But I inhaled it.
Yeah,
it was excellent. So
yeah, I could probably kill like a gecko with my book or something. But not a little
gecko, maybe a cockroach.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something a little more dorky. Let's get back into the inkliness. Tell me about some of your comic influences. You're talking about Elsie Seeger earlier, the genius behind Popeye.
Yeah, I guess the comics I sort of grew up on were like, I'm trying to think of, probably the Hernandez brothers were a big influence for me in my sort of formative years, and Hergé doing the Tintin comics, these are things that probably I was reading that don't show up obviously in my work, but I was reading them as they were my favorites that I read
you know,
when I was a kid.
I could actually maybe see a little Tintin.
Yeah.
A little bit in the hair.
Yeah. the little wisps,
yeah.
Wisps of hair. Yeah. I think what else I was sort of into. I think that when I started doing mini comics, a big influence were just the other mini comics cartoonists that were sort of around me or that I was sort of encountering in the scene. When I first started sort of cartoonist get-togethers, I met a lot of people like Jesse Recklaw, who's been doing mini comics and is now is doing a big graphic novel, I think, called forget what the actual name of it. It's from his mini comics Couch Tag and 13 Cats of my childhood, and Dan Zetwalk. I feel like I was influenced by Dan Zetwalk and Kevin Azenga, who both came out of sort of St. Louis, and are both like roughly my own age.
And both very, very talented folks.
Yeah.
And Jesse's great,
too. They both do comics that are really diagrammatic in a kind of interesting way, where they use the like visual elements of comics as their there's not a, like a real stark division between writing and drawing, like the drawing sort of help kind of like diagram out things, and I just think that's kind of neat.
I find Kevin's stuff to be very poetic, but Dan, it's like this is like deconstructing something.
Uh-huh.
It's just really fascinating what he's able to do and just like pull apart things and go right into the middle of the panel. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, he's pretty amazing. It's like I feel like, you know, Kevin's comics are more they're sort of more philosophical and soulful, whereas Dan's comics are very like incisive, kind of like deconstructive, but they have this great great sort of Americana like folky voice to them, and they're so like artfully constructed.
Something you imagine like a 65-year-old guy narrating and.
Yeah. Well, I think Dan is a 30-year-old man with a 65-year-old Kentuckian inside of him.
And those were the St. Louis floods of 1937.
Yep.
And
sitting on his porch with his corn cob pipe, like a jug of
malt liquor,
corn whiskey in his hand or something.
I would love a jug of corn whiskey right now.
Yeah, yeah. That would be wonderful. Could hit the spot.
I'd probably get sick.
Our interview might venture pretty far afield for it to do that. Let me tell you something about kids today.
What do you do with these web comics? I mean, how do you turn the page on this internet?
How am I supposed to read that on the crapper?
Exactly. I'm not bringing my laptop into the bathroom. What kind of comics are you working on now?
I guess I'm kind of in a little bit of a lull. There's like this, when I first start working on a comic, it's like this sort of euphoric because all of a sudden like I've got like an idea and sort of a general theme and everything kind of angles towards that and then comes like the hard part of actually putting it into construction and like actually executing it, which some parts of that is fun and some parts of it is kind of like a chore, and then when I'm done I'm kind of just like I'm like what am I going to do now, so I'm just sort of right now I'm just doing a lot of drawing and sort of there's a lot of things that I kind of felt like after I was done with the Hot Breath of War I didn't really feel like I was personally done with like I there's like characters that I liked and concepts and themes that I liked that I wanted to sort of explore more, so I've been sort of doing these kind of things that are like weird sort of personal spin-offs of the book. I've been painting little watercolors based on scenes and themes from the book and just sort of like drawing in my sketchbook and so I might, you know, it's possible that the next comic I do might have some like things that were in the Hot Breath of War or some of the same characters because I kind of like them. It's like you sort of live with the characters for a year and you don't want to let them go just because the book is done with.
It seems like something you can definitely expand upon.
Yeah There's characters that have shown up previously, like the Mason Rubella character, who's kind of, I feel like people, this cartoonist, like inevitably, or a lot of cartoonists inevitably come up with, you know, some kind of generic stand-in for themselves, even if the stories aren't like strictly autobiographical. Like, you end up creating this like container who's like a useful protagonist. And so I did a mini comic of like 4 or 5 years ago called Do Tell, that had that same Mason Rubella character who he's in the Hot Breath of War. He's working at some like late night job, and then decides to take off and call up some girl that he likes, and then they end up going out on a date, and then weird crazy hell breaks loose, and there's like
post-apocalyptic flood,
post-apocalyptic catastrophes and floods, and there's kind of a slapsticky sex scene, like a sex cloud, instead of the usual like fight cloud, the arms and legs exploding out of the fog. I did a comic about with him as a character years ago, and then he sort of just popped back into the mix with this one. So he might show up again too. I just sort of like the characters are kind of charming to me, so I might do more things with them. But I'm also just kind of trying to get the comic out there too, because Sparkplug is a very good publisher, and they've definitely taken a chance on me and a lot of other really good cartoonists. But it's a small publisher, so I've got to sort of go out and try to publicize the book.
You got to pimp yourself.
Go to SPX and go on a little book tour in the fall.
I guess I'm presuming you'll be at Ape.
Yes, I will definitely be at Ape, because that's sort of right in my backyard, and I think it's in November this year. So I'm going to be doing, that's my immediate future, is I'm going to be going, doing sort of press in the flesh, as far as that goes. I think we're going to have a signing at the Quimby's comic book store after SPX, too.
Oh,
Chicago.
Nice. In Chicago.
Chicago, which is a lovely city. I've only been there once, but did when I was there.
Lots of good cartoonists there.
Yeah.
Lots.
It's a city of big shoulders.
Big shoulders. Well, thanks for coming and joining us today.
Sure, it's been a pleasure. Any other things you would like to know about me?
Actually, yeah, one quick thing, because we got, I think your song's about 4 minutes long, and we got 5 minutes, so one quick question is, how important are dreams to you?
Are dreams?
Because they play a role in both books.
I think that... I haven't done any comics that are like, or at least not recently, that are like literal dream comics, but they are pretty important as far as the creative process goes, because when you wake up from, they've actually done studies on this, when you wake up, your right brain wakes up sort of before the left brain. And so I always do a lot of sort of brainstorming, like right first thing in the morning after I've woken up, and I've had still fragments of dreams in my head, and I come up with lots of good ideas then. But I actually do all my hard work in like the dead of night. I think dreams are pretty important in that regard. They're good problem solving. I feel like they say that if you're in an intractable situation or having trouble coming up with a solution to things, that you should try to think about it right after you've woken up, because it's the right half of the brain that makes all the dramatic leaps.
There we go. Yeah. Something for other creative folks to keep in mind as their own exercise.
Yeah, see, it's not just, pen nibs and, what type of ink do you use. There's plenty of other creative advice out there.
There is. Thank you very much for joining us today, Trevor.
Thanks a lot, Robin. It was a pleasure.
And just for folks, remember Trevor Alexopoulos, Hot Breath of War, as well as Mine Tonight, both available from Sparkplug Books. Please go and check it out. And thanks, Trevor.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
You too. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And if you're in Vancouver, I think Lucky's or RX Comics would be your best option. If you're outside of Vancouver, go to good comic stores, and they better have that kind of stuff. Up next is Crimes and Treasons. They're out there, looking ready to rock. And don't forget, next week, Dash Shaw. Talk to you all later, folks. We'll be right back.